Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with jazz trombonist John Fumasoli of the Jones Factor. This band is a 10-piece little big band formed back in 1986 by John. He talked about their new 2022 CD, The Time Is Now, COVID life, and his long road to music. Over the years, he has been in some high-end places with wonderful musicians, like the Village Vanguard Orchestra, Woody Herman Orchestra, Jerry Mulligan, Randy Brecker, Tony Bennett, Bobby McFerrin, and so many others. He's got a great story. Enjoy this interview.
Joe Domino, Neon Jazz Radio in Kansas City, Missouri.
Joe, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How's life?
Life is good here. It's a beautiful, beautiful day out in the woods here. I live about 45 minutes out of Manhattan, and it's very, very nice today.
I like it. Wonderful. Well, hey, thanks for taking a minute out today to talk about The Time Is Now and your life and music. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So before we get into this album, we've gone through quite a time on planet Earth for the last couple of years, and we're kind of coming out of it. I know, you know, musicians were run through the ringer in a different way than anybody else in the arts. So how did you do over that period, and how have you changed now that we're coming out of it?
Well, I think I'm very fortunate because I'm kind of on the other side of it. I'd hate to be a musician that's kind of starting out now. It's of course, it'd be very, very difficult, especially after the pandemic. But so I've had a long and fruitful career and everything. So for me to adapt during that period, I was able to do remote recordings and do some things to make some money. Obviously wasn't doing any live playing, but, you know, kind of being able to deal with it from the standpoint of saying, all right, I didn't want to go out this way if I have to go out this way, but, I could kind of deal with it. And then, you know, doing some writing, and, being able to, you know, get some new material for the Jones Factor and for some other groups that I work with. So, you know, it was, thankfully healthy too. Because, you know, so many people weren't healthy and we lost a lot of great musicians during that time period and artists and friends and all family and all of that. So, thankfully knocking on wood that, you know, the health factor was good. So, but you know, a lot of planning, a lot of introspection, trying to figure out, you know, what I might do, how, where this might all go, and certainly saying, okay, this album, The Time Is Now, we have to really finish this, and we have to really get going on this, so probably I would say, you know, and then just practicing and working on my craft, which is something as musicians we do all the time, so.
As we get into this album here, you know, it must be relieving to have an album coming out now, and the chance for live music and all of that. Does it feel refreshing to have this out come out right now?
I would say it was definitely refreshing to have it come out now because as things opened up, I would say around here, New York started March, April to really start to happen. And so by the time we got into the middle of the summer, I think people were really overjoyed to be out. When the album came out, we had a performance at a place called La Zingara in Bethel, Connecticut, which is right on the New York border here. And, you know, it was very well attended. It was outside, which helps. I think people, you know, the outdoor venues, places where people were able to, you know, see and hear live music were better off throughout it. So, but yes, very pleased to have it out now. We've got a lot of great responses on it. And, you know, overjoyed to have a really good product in our hand.
So from a listener perspective, what are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
That's a very good question. I think a variety of things. One, the joy of the playing of the musicians that are on the record. And thankfully, a lot of friends are on this record, on this CD. And, you know, just an idea, too, that we can kind of cover a lot of different bases from our experience level. You know, there's some straight-ahead jazz, there's some fusion jazz, there's some more modern jazz, there's some R&B on there. Some of the guests on the record, Chiele Minucci, a special effects, fantastic playing on the record and performance, and You know, I think just the joy of making, you know, good music and good art.
So let's go back in your life a little bit here. Talk to me about where you were born and raised and kind of how the seeds of not only music but jazz kind of got into you.
Wow. Upstate New York, not too far away from where I am here, probably about 2.5 hours out of New York City. So I was very lucky to have a really good band program growing up. And so I was always balancing out sports and music. And my parents, especially my mom, was into the arts and into painting. And she did some floral design as well. So, I had a really, I was very lucky to have an upbringing where, I was always involved with the arts and playing music. And as I said, my band program was really, really good. And kind of oddly enough, what got me spurred into playing the trombone was 76 Trombones, which I believe came out during my childhood. And so, that was something that really got me going. And I would say, listening to, especially in those days, the horn bands, Chicago, Tower of Power, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, those kinds of bands, as I was, in my teenage years. And I was close to Woodstock as well. And so there was lots of music happening, and the horn band certainly influenced me to getting into music. And I got into jazz probably a little bit later, probably 18, 19, 20 years old. And I think it was because of the bridge. I know it was because of the bridge between, some of the R&B things, James Brown, what have you, that were going on at the time. And that kind of pushed me into to listening to jazz and kind of getting into it. Now, I'll never forget, I had a friend, a drummer friend, and he said to me, "Listen, you got to come over to the house, you got to listen to this today." And I had never heard of John Coltrane before, and so he played me John Coltrane, A Love Supreme. And I think my life changed after hearing that as an 18-year-old. And so that, along with lots of other things, really kind of pushed me into playing jazz. But as I said, I had a good upbringing. So while at times I was not necessarily into playing the trombone as much as maybe I should have been, that upbringing and that good teaching that I had in the schools, was very, very lucky to have that, really kept me in good stead. So in good shape, so that when I decided to really make a career out of music, I was set up pretty well. And then on from there, I went to a place called the University of Bridgeport, and the director of the jazz ensemble there was a guy by the name of Neil Slater, who went on to North Texas State, and I believe he was there as jazz director for probably 25 years. So I was, again, in good hands. But I would say Miles Davis, John Coltrane, the great vocalist Johnny Hartman, Tony Bennett, and others. And then when Weather Report came out, that of course was another time that I think was a period of new music for me. So kind of listening to the great straight ahead artists and innovators. And then, as fusion started to take off, and bands like Tony Williams' Lifetime, of course, and Weather Report came out. And so it was a good time. It was good. Again, I always look back and I said, wow, I was really lucky to be in this time period and to have really good teachers and good influences as well.
So what was the first live jazz show that you saw that really blew you away?
The first live jazz show, I was very lucky to see the Monday Night Orchestra, which in those days at the Village Vanguard was called Thad Jones, Mel Lewis. So I got the tail end of that. And I was telling a friend of mine recently, I saw John Faddis, was his first few performances. So I would say the Village Vanguard, seeing Thad and Mel. That was, of course, a big influence. And then in the early '80s, I probably, Bill Evans did a live record at the Vanguard, and I probably saw five out of the eight shows because he was a big influence as well. But you know, Santana was probably, and of course, that's a crossover. Santana Tower of Power was big too. And I saw them a lot. And we used to go to Woodstock all the time when I was a kid growing up, and, you know, we would see, you know, all sorts of different groups performing. So, lucky enough to be seeing, you know, larger concerts and then very small venues as well. But, you know, Thad Jones and Mel Lewis, and the people at the Vanguard were wonderful too, because they knew we were students, you know, and so they might charge us for the first set, and then they'd find a place for us after that to stay all night and just kind of, you know, even if it was hanging out toward the bathroom at the back of the club and being able to see these great artists. And they were just wonderful. You know, again, this mentorship, you know, letting us, you know, early, late teens, early 20s, just hang out and you know, get to see and hear this great music.
You know, you've been around a lot of heavy hitters over your career, and what did you learn from the elders and legends and luminaries that you, in turn, teach younger players that you get around?
Well, that's a really, really good question, and I think, one of the biggest things is appreciate your art, appreciate your gift, you know, and try to, you know, share that gift with as many people as possible. The trombone that I play was given to me basically by, he charged me a couple hundred dollars for it years and years ago by a gentleman named Eddie Burt, who I call the quintessential Kansas City trombone player, because he played with Basie and he knew all the plunger techniques, and he played with Monk and others. But, you know, they were always, especially the old schoolers, you know, appreciate the gift that you have, appreciate, you know, what, if it's God-given talent or if it's talent, you know, whatever you might believe, and treat that as something that's really, really special. You know, share with others too, have this mentorship with others, and whether it's through students or it's just, you know, helping people along in the business, young musicians, you know, working their way up, and then keep working at it too. We're always trying to get better, and we're always trying to learn new things, and there's always new things to learn. That's the other thing. I think, you know, some of these artists were, you know, instrumental in saying, listen, you know, be open-minded and check out new things. Some of them, of course, were very close-minded in terms of, you know, especially fusion and the rock side of things. But, you know, I think the better ones taught me to be very open-minded about things as well.
You've had longevity in this business, and you've been around for a long time. This is kind of a two-part question. What's been the key to that longevity, and what do you enjoy the most out of that process of being a professional musician?
Well, you know, I think playing in front of people is always the big thing, and that joy, because there's nothing like that. And, you know, I go out and perform, and people look at me and go, oh, you look like you're just, you know, really, really calm. While I'm calm once I get going. But that initial, boy, it could be nerve-wracking being out there. But I would say just being out, being able to perform in front of people. And, of course, with the pandemic, that was the worst part of it, because we didn't have, you know, that opportunity to do that. You know, and like I say, the joy that you give other people and the joy that it brings yourself, you know, I think very, very important. But that to me, you know, like you said, I've had a long career, and I've been able to play with people, you know, whether it's Tony Bennett or the Temptations or the Supremes or you know, Jerry Mulligan or whoever it might have been, just to appreciate all of that and say, okay, what you did meant something. You know, I think here in New York, it's, well, goodness gracious, there's so many great musicians, you know, whether it's trombone or it's any instrument, it's just, there's hundreds of fantastic musicians, and to know you survived in that environment and were, you know, able to succeed and carve out a career, you know, make a living out of it and still being able to do it. You know, when you sit and reflect, which I don't always do as often as I should, but when I do, I say, well, you know, you really had it pretty good here. You've done it, you've done pretty well. So, you know, from that kid who maybe was more of a jock than he was a musician at the beginning of his life. So, yeah, for certain that. But again, you know, you can't beat performing in front of live audiences. My goodness gracious, it's what a feeling. What a joy.
So let's say you have a dream tonight. You run into the younger version of yourself, maybe, you know, when you were really getting ready to go out there to get it. And you can give your younger version a piece of advice based on the wisdom that you've accumulated. What would you tell that younger version?
I think it's kind of, and here again, you know, this comes from, you know, we're lucky in New York here. Well, first of all, there's lots of musicians, so, you know, the competition is fierce and everything, but there is something to do, you know. Yeah, a lot of the greatest players are sitting in Broadway right now. But I would say to them, you know, be true to your craft and all of that, but whatever you have to do to survive in music is what you have to do. And if it's getting a day job, if that's what works for you, or if it's, you know, playing private parties or, you know, whatever you can do to survive, teaching. You know, I've had a long career of teaching. I'm still teaching jazz history at Fairfield University, and I've been doing that for about 25 years. But, you know, whatever it takes so that you can survive, and, you know, kind of perpetuate your craft and perpetuate the, you know, jazz, as well. Because if we're not contributing, we're not working at it, you know, it could fall apart pretty easily. If people like you are not out there, you know, promoting, perpetuating jazz, it's, you know, where what's going to happen to it. So, whatever that thing is, whatever you have to do, to kind of be able to survive and, you know, move forward in your musical endeavors is what you have to do. And you will have a lot of naysayers along the way, that's for sure. You have a lot of people trying to talk you out of it. But if that's your love and that's your desire and your, you know, your vision, then you've got to go for it. Because we never know where the next Wynton or the next Jaco or Miles or whoever is going to come from. So, keep after it and, you know, I will tell you this, and I'll tell them this. It's not easy. It's not easy. So be in it for the long haul, and be in it for knowing that it's going to be rough too, and tough.
Everyone has a perception of you: your family, your friends, your fans. But ultimately, you're the one living your life. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Wow, that's a tough one. Kind of a lot of things, you know, and I think that helps with the music too. You know, I'm really into cars. I'm really into family. I'm into teaching, and I'm into, you know, performing and playing. So I think it's probably a combination of all of those things. But, you know, I had a lot of time when I was growing up where my uncle had a big farm, and so I spent a lot of time there. So, you know, to be out in the tractor mowing the lawn or out in the tractor or out in the garden working and stuff like that too, brings great joy, you know, putting your hands in the soil and kind of working. So, I don't really think of myself, that might sound a little complex. I don't know. I don't really think of myself as being that complex though. You know, I just kind of, And the other thing is, I don't want to be too, I don't want to be too full of myself either. Man, you just got to turn the radio on or turn some CDs on or what have you. And there's great players out there all the time. So, you know, be steady, be true to yourself. You know, be confident, but be careful what you're doing with that confidence as well.
I like that answer. I like it. Yeah, we're complex creatures for sure. John, this has been great, man. Thank you for opening up. Good luck with the album and, you know, with the world opening up. It's great to talk to you, man.
Thank you so much. Listen, the time is now is available. CD form on all the streaming platforms, and please support us. Support Jazz, support live radio, live performances, and hey, buy the time is now.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to John for his time, class, and cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.